Look at the dollar lotto to bring us to poverty. Look at Colorado killing Walmart monopoly. Sadly, takes catastrophes to bring us closer. And man, working class man are sewn up, cold crust thrown up still. And Bush and Pickle, they hold us. Pass the tricks in front of us to cover ups. And so we covered lust after a couple bucks. And the tragedy of humanity keeps it all done.
Rosemary birth, the baby boy, George Bush, the Antichrist. It's the end as we know it. Predicted in paintings of Mary Magdalene, Da Vinci coded. Open the third eye of the poet, point noted. So keep flossing, spending money on frozen jewelry. Holes and jewelry pay off, your way off. Dying in your car while I ride Jimi Hendrix flying guitar for the stars.
Stars only look to them distracted. Probably sick or thinking about sedition actors. Instead of issues that matters, we're stricken inactive. Capitalism captive, trapped in a prison and shackles. And of course, we never see the world for really how it is. The genocide, the pestilence, the pessimism lives inside of us. They wired us to be numb to the facts. The world already ended, we never gonna get it back.
listen to my heart speak.
Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun. I wait for you.
I wait for you.
To say welcome. Of course, I'm not using the correct mic. Let's try this again. Let's see. Hello, hello.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Paulette. We have that very exciting show on beforehand Rebel Diaz Radio. So when I come in, I am trying to figure out where everything is because it's all a little different. Welcome, Paulette. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's so good to be here this evening. We are done with our fundraising, or so it seems. We never know. And
until the next time.
Exactly, which right around the corner, I'm sure. But we do have a few precious weeks to be able to be more relaxed and to be able to really speak to people about what's going on in our world. And when I say our world, I mean all of our world here on Earth. And this evening I played both of the theme songs. I don't know how we're going to work that out. But this is really a fusion, this program at midnight, Earth at Midnight, fusing with the program Heart of Mine, which broadcast formerly on Monday afternoons, and now we're going to be broadcasting here together. So I think that that is really exciting. I'm looking forward to see what we create in this lot. So I know you have some ideas of some of the interviews that you're going to be doing as we come forward. And, you know, we don't want to announce them because we have to arrange those interviews first.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting that we're going to be having a mixture of sort of thoughtful conversation and inspirational conversation and political conversation, all intermingled. And to me, that makes it a very holistic approach, because we all have these various aspects in our lives that we have to manage.
Certainly.
So, yeah, yeah. So what has your week, month been like for you?
That's quite a loaded question there. just a bit hectic, but it's in my transformation into my day job. I think things have just been a bit demanding, and so I had to sort of think quickly on my feet. And I think I've managed to do that. And the month isn't over, so I'm still trying to be as creative as I can and get the work done.
Well, yeah, I understand that. The last month was very hectic for myself as well because of the fundraising here at WBAI. Mm. But generally speaking, my life has been quite peaceful in the sense that I don't have a stress-filled day most of the time, at least no longer. It's just when I get my, you know, and I have these assignments, that things start to get a little bit hairy, and I allow myself to get quite stressed out. And it's interesting because, you know, I spend a lot of focus on not being stressed out, mm-hmm. on really finding a balance. And it's interesting because, well, I'm finding that you can't find an ultimate balance. It's just a matter of creating a balancing act, in the sense that you have to continuously work on that process. I don't think it's a space that people live in, maybe if they're living in a monastery. But yeah. Living in the world, it's really not easy to be able to make that sense of peaceful existence, you know, to make it a constant. But I think that how we deal with things can be a constant. You know, the stress comes and goes, but what we do with it makes all the difference.
Certainly, and I believe that also having a sense of, for lack of a better word, boundary is very important. so that you can sort of leave your stress off in some space somewhere while you relax in your own private space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to have that area of your life where the time and the what you do with that time is purely yours. And so I find that that's how I manage. It's to make sure that I leave my professional demands sort of at the door, and when I have my private spaces, it's entirely for me to decide what to do with it. What to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that does certainly help to ground me.
Yeah, I think that's really important consideration to have.
Mm.
And so this program, Earth at Midnight, fused with Heart of Mind, is one in which we're going to look at a whole lot of different issues as they affect our life. And also, I think one of the things that I think both Paulette and I enjoy most about the show is the interaction and feedback. And one of the things, the disadvantage we have at this moment is because we've moved into our new space in Brooklyn, which is a lovely thing, you know, in some ways. However, the phones have not yet been set up. So we're not quite ready for prime time, such as it is. And so we're not able to really take those phone calls as we would normally do. But I wanted to put out there that if you want to make a connection, you can always do that through email. And the email for myself, for the show, is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And Paulette is still using the email. What is it? The Night Report?
Yes.
The
nightreport@gmail.com.
So you could always get in touch with us, even though it might seem like, you know, we're not accessible, and hopefully the phones will be back in business very soon. I do have a Facebook page as well, but you know, it's really difficult when you're not of this current era to really keep these things up. So I do have a Facebook page, and you can make that connection. In fact, if you go to the website, heartofmindradio.com, you can click onto the Facebook page, and that will be another way that we can all interact and connect. And the page is there, and you're able to make that connection now. And as we go forward, we can make that, you know, we can communicate in that way. And that's a way we could communicate even while we're off the air. So that's pretty cool. And so there's a lot of ways that we can stay connected. And as we go forward, we can grow in this time slot and become very much acclimated. Actually, I think we're already pretty much acclimated. It's just that the environment has changed and the situation around us has changed. It reminds me of the way the world is right now. It's almost as if the ground is changing underneath our feet.
Yes, indeed.
You know,
and have to adapt.
Yeah, the situations change very quickly these days. You know, job situations change, family situations change, you know, health situations change. It's one of those things where it's really important for all of us to try to keep a balance, because the one thing we can depend on happening is that there will be change.
Mm.
So at least we can rely upon that.
Yeah.
And so that's a good thing. I do have a little bit of audio segments to share this evening. I have two, and maybe we'll get through both of these. The first one, it's about 15 minutes long, and it's a compilation of ideas from three different authors. One is Angelus Arian, the second is Joseph Goldstein, and the third is Alice Walker. And the theme of this composite is really to look at and to consider what it is to have self-mastery, to really be able to cultivate that state of attentiveness and aliveness in everyday life. And so Angelus Arian is speaking from her program, which is called What is Gratitude? And she is a scholar, I believe. And the program Gratitude is the essential practice for happiness and fulfillment. And yes, she's a cultural anthropologist and a spiritual teacher. And so that's going to be the first excerpt. And then from Joseph Goldstein, he's going to be speaking about nothing is outside of our practice. And he's also a teacher of Buddhist meditation practices since 1974. And in the excerpt, it's coming from a program called Abiding in Mindfulness. And he explains how mindfulness can and must be practiced even in the most trying of circumstances. And the third segment is Alice Walker, and she's going to be talking about the natural self. Now, she's a winner of the Pulitzer Prize as well as an American Book Award. She's recognized for her as one of the most influential writers of our time. And her novels are The Third Life of Grange Copeland, Meridian, The Temple of My Familiar, Possessing the Secret of Joy, and her most famous work was The Color Purple. And so she's going to be speaking about it's important to appreciate yourself and to live your life as the natural being that you are. So I'm going to go to a little music, and then we'll play that excerpt, and then we'll be back for a little bit more discussion. So stay tuned.
What is gratitude? The word gratitude comes from the Latin grata or gratia, which means given or gift, from which we get the word grace. Grace, as an aspect of gratitude, is unearned. It's a free gift. What moments of grace have you experienced this year? where you've been moved to give gratitude or grata or gratia, a given gift that was unearned, a free gift, a moment of peace, a moment of solace, a moment of unexpected comfort or deep satisfaction. As Meister Eckhart said, if the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough. It's so interesting that today we have thank you online in 465 languages, and millions of people from around the world have visited that website. There's not a language in the world that doesn't have the capacity to say thank you. And as parents, we also instruct our children to say thank you. Gift giving is one of the universals that we all share cross-culturally. And in honoring of gift giving, which has been used cross-culturally as signs of respect, as signs of generosity, signs of wanting to honor family and home, that gift giving is something that naturally generates gratitude as well as generosity. So when we think about grace as a free gift, it's also interesting to think about all the gifts that we have in our life that have come our way through blessings, through learnings, through mercies, through protections, through honoring and respecting friendship or family. So where am I in relationship to generosity at this time? What of the gifts that have come my way this year? What are the gifts that I have given? What is the generosity that I've extended that requires no extension back? The International Encyclopedia of Ethics says, gratitude is the heart's internal indicator on which the tally of gifts outweighs exchanges. It's essentially the willingness and attitude to recognize the unearned increments of value in one's life. Albert Einstein reminded himself every day, he said, 100 times a day, I remind myself that my inner and outer life depends on the labors of other men, living and dead, and that I must exert myself in order to give in the full measure I have received and I am giving. I am so grateful. It's my responsibility to not only receive, but to give. Writer Alex Tocqueville once called gratitude a habit of the heart. He was referring to the fact that gratitude is an attitude to have toward all of life. M.J. Ryan's classic book, The Attitude of Gratitude, supports gratitude as a stance in life. It's a stance to take through the difficult seasons of life as well as the good times. But gratitude is not simply an emotional response. It's a choice we make. We choose to be grateful, or we choose to be ungrateful, or take our gifts and blessings for granted. The practice of gratitude every day keeps the heart open. It is impossible to give gratitude from a closed heart. What am I grateful for today? What are the blessings and learnings that have come my way today for which I am grateful?
Buddha gave some very direct instruction here. He said, you should train like this. My body may be sick, yet my mind will not be afflicted. Well, that's a very powerful teaching, I think. May my body be sick, may my body be dying, yet may my mind not be afflicted. Because he's pointing to the very important understanding that absolutely nothing is outside of our practice. No experience we have, no matter how pleasant nor how unpleasant, we need to bring the same degree of mindful attention, noting the pleasant, noting the unpleasant. Our mind can remain unafflicted. Now, how are we with difficult external situations, unpleasant external situations? How does the mind respond? Something is unpleasant externally. You know, when we practice in Asia, of course, a common disturbance, at least initial disturbance, was all the noise. Now, some of you may know this. This is from an anecdote of Ajahn Chah. When he went to do a retreat himself in a little meditation hut outside of the village where he had been teaching, and one of the nights he was practicing, the villagers were having a big party, and there was a lot of music and loudspeakers and noise and sound. And according to the story, his mind was getting very irritated and annoyed. And don't they know I'm their teacher and I'm up here practicing, and why are they disturbing me and they're making all of this noise? And then he saw what was happening in his own mind. This was in one of the books. He said, well, they're just having a good time down there. I'm making myself miserable up here. No matter how upset I get, my anger is just making more noise internally. And then had this insight. Oh, the sound is just the sound. It's me who is going out to annoy it. If I leave the sound alone, it won't annoy me. It's just doing what it has to do. That's what sound does. It makes sound. This is its job. So if I don't go out and bother the sound, it's not going to bother me. Aha. So really, although he didn't use precisely the same language, he's pointing to the same thing. Talking about the mind's tendency to react to the unpleasantness of the sound, and then realizing that's only one's own reactivity. The unpleasantness is just what it is. Unpleasant sound. It's not a problem when we're mindful. So we thought perhaps to have intermittent sessions of loud Hindi film music piped in, just by way of practicing. So one last piece that I just want to mention briefly tonight with regard to feeling and mindfulness of feeling. Often we don't see that it's the feeling itself that is the pleasantness, unpleasantness, or neutrality. We don't see that it's the feeling that we're reacting to and not the object itself. You know, we think it's the sound we don't like, or we think it's the fantasy that we want. Or we think it's some object that we either like or don't like. But it's not the object. It's not the sound. It's not the fantasy. What the mind is reacting to is the feeling tone arising in that moment of contact. It's the pleasantness that we like. It's the unpleasantness that we don't like. If we don't see this, then we get into a struggle with the object. When we do see it, and we become mindful of the feeling, it's much easier to see, oh, the feeling is just an impermanent arising and passing away. It's easier to see the ephemeral, impermanent nature of the feeling. As we practice mindfulness of these feelings, and I would suggest you incorporate this into your practice, you apply this part of the teachings of the sutta. Practice recognizing and using the noting if it's helpful. Recognizing the arising, oh, this is pleasant, this is unpleasant, this is neutral, with an immediacy. Really bring the mind in close with a sense of interest, with a sense of investigation and inquiry of trying to understand directly for yourself, what is the nature of pleasantness? What is the nature of unpleasantness? And in doing that, it will become very clear that these feelings, this quality of pleasantness and unpleasant neutrality, are empty of substance, are changing in every moment. And we become less entranced by them, less reactive to them. And in the words of one Tibetan teacher, we learn to rest our weary minds. It's wearying to be reactive to every feeling that arises. When we come to a place of ease, we come to a place of rest when we can simply be mindful of them. So this is the Buddha's instruction to those interested in liberation. It's a very explicit instruction. He said, whatever feelings arise, whether pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, abide contemplating impermanence in those feelings. Contemplate fading away, or the passing away, letting go of those feelings. Contemplating thus, we do not cling to anything in this world. Contemplate the impermanence in those feelings, the passing away, the letting go of those feelings. Contemplating thus, we do not cling to anything in this world. When we don't cling, there is no agitation. When not agitated, we personally attain Nibbana. So this is the practice we can undertake here. And the time you're here, it's a wonderful opportunity to refine the attention on this mindful abiding, the second of the Satipatthanas.
I think that what is required is silence, and that really is, I mean, in my experience, the only thing is not really listening to other people, is really listening to you and letting you lead and speak and express. Often in this culture, people are so programmed to think hierarchically that the blonder, the better, the bluer your eyes, you know, the whiter your skin. There is this whole notion that you have to be some other way in order to be right. Nothing in nature supports that view. So what people have to realize is that they're really just fine, you know, they're just fine the way they are. And that the beauty and the joy of it all is to be more that, you know, to be more of that self, because it's really unique. It's you. It's a fine expression for this moment, for this time. And for the rest of us around people, we should let them be whatever they are and whoever they are, and actually learn to enjoy it. And it really is something that is an internal flowering that has its expression externally, the more you become yourself.
once again. You are listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Paulette, are you there?
I am here.
Can you hear my voice?
Yes, I can.
Cool. I can't always tell from this perspective, and I've turned myself off the air several times so far, so forgive my insecurity. Well, that was, we heard from three speakers, Angelus Arian, Joseph Goldstein, and Alice Walker. And for those who enjoy these kind of bits of inspirational information, you could actually get this audio. It's free on SoundsTrue.com. So if you go to www.SoundsTrue.com, I mean, you know, it's a seller, so you'll find a lot of stuff that you can spend money on if you choose to. But they also have a lot of free things there, so it's always fun to explore. So what did you think of those three perspectives on self-mastery?
I thought there was a lot of truth to what they were saying. I think we've spoken in the past about the importance of getting away from distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I gathered, a lot of what they're referring to is that state of quietness and listening to yourself away from any distractions from the the outside world, and I thought that was quite profound.
Yeah. It was really interesting to me as well, because one of the things that I have found most useful was the part that Joseph Goldstein was speaking of. And I've really been working on this for a very long time. It's being able to be with your emotions, but not needing to necessarily express them. So if something happens and you're feeling off center, or you're feeling angry, or you're feeling hurt about something, I've always just felt that if you sit with it for a while, and instead of like jumping to a conclusion based on something, you will discover that you can save yourself a lot of grief. And I've found that that's true, because very often when we get into some kind of exchange with someone, there's a lot of projection. You know, you come to a situation with misconception, or you're projecting your insecurity, or the person is projecting, and you can get into a big jumbled mess by reacting to something, to an emotion that, you know, that rises up within you. So I really like that idea of just recognizing it, that it comes and it goes. It's like a wave. Like something might rise up, but it's eventually going to dissolve. And in that way, you can think about the situation and perhaps deal with it when you're in a calm state, or once you calm down, you recognize that it was a misunderstanding. It just makes life so much easier, I have found, not to become too attached to whatever it is that's going on in the moment in such a quick way. You know, sometimes there are problems and you do need to do something, work on it, resolve something, have a conversation. But it's so much better to do it with a calm state rather than an agitated state. So I found that to be something that has really improved my life for sure.
Yeah, I think that it's a way of reducing one's sense of, I guess, impulsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, sometimes it's a question of perception. And when you calm down a bit, your perception changes and you give yourself a chance to be, how would I say, I wouldn't say introspective, but to gain a better understanding, I would say, of a situation, mm-hmm. Rather than instantly reacting to it.
Yeah. And I guess after a while, what happens is that you find that you're not really reacting to things. You're just sort of having having a dialogue. Like, well, that's interesting. This just happened, or this, you know, it's like you become a little bit more of an observer of what's going on around you. And so there's nothing to react to anymore. So I have found that to be one of the things that have helped me most along the way, I would say. I also wanted to let people know that if you are interested in getting inspirational messages in your email box, you can go to this website. It's called tut.org. Now, it isn't me, it's Mike Dooley, and he does a lot of really very interesting work on positive affirmations and making your life, learning how to make your life work for you by understanding the power of words. So it's a really interesting website. There's a lot of video. You can sign up for free daily inspirations. I signed up for it because I like to check things out just to see what's there. And it's really quite good. In fact, we've had Mike Dooley on the air, the author of all this, a number of times, and he's just a very inspirational person. So for people who want that and can use a little pick-me-up every day, it's quite short. Let me see if I could find what they sent me. It's here somewhere. And, well, I'll find it eventually. But it's really, I thought it was kind of sweet. Oh, here it is. There's like notes from the universe. And it's just, behold a new day with rainbow sunshine and blue skies. You know, new players, rebounds and recoveries, abundance, health and harmony, just like you've been picturing them. So it's a tiny little affirmation. And the affirmation is based on clues that you give them about what you want to affirm in your life. So it's a nice little thing for people who want that pick-me-up. And the other thing I wanted to remind folks about is that a couple of weeks ago I was talking about a breath practice that I had gone to. I'm trying to remember what it was called. But I will look it up for you. But at any rate, there's another one happening, coming up this coming weekend. It happens around the new year, not the new year, around the moon, either the full moon or the new moon. And it's a time when there's a thinning of the veil, and you can make a deeper connection to the higher self. And it's basically a way of going on a shamanic journey. Now, a lot of people, when they go on a shamanic journey, they take like a drink, like ayahuasca or something like that. And in this case, though, you just do it with breath. And I found it to be really, really interesting because it took me to a space of really being able to feel energy in my body very powerfully. And I use a lot of energy anyway because I do Qigong practice. But it's this extended breathing is a way of really making a deep connection into your, you know, your inner world. It's just really, really interesting. And so I just wanted to put it out there. If anyone is interested in checking this out, please send me an email to heartofmindradio@gmail.com. I've been looking for it as we've been speaking, but apparently it's no longer on the website, unfortunately. So you'll have to send me a email and I can tell you more about it. It's like, and it's a shamanic breath work, and it's about an hour, hour and a half, and it's, but it's, what happened is the first night I, after I did it, I went into these, I had a lot of very vivid experiential dreams, but they were really dreams. But they were very insightful into what was going on in my life. And then the second night after the practice, I became lucid in my dream state, which is when you're aware, you're awake in the dream and aware that you're dreaming and awake in your dream. And it becomes a very, a much more conscious co-creation in a way. And it's a way of making that connection to guides and higher self. So I found it to be really powerful. Huh. I don't know if you've had any experiences like that. I really haven't, because I've not been one to take a trip to the Amazon and eat magic mushrooms or something like that. You know, it's just not kind of my thing. Huh. But I know a lot of people who have done that and had very powerful experiences. And I was really surprised that you can do the same thing. Well, maybe it's not exactly the same, but you can get into that state of expanded awareness by virtue of your breath. So I thought that that was really powerful. And so I want to give people an opportunity to find out about it. Just drop me an email, if you can, to heartofmindradio@gmail.com, and you'll be able to, I'll send you info on it. But it's this coming weekend somewhere. It's either before or after the new moon, when the moon is sort of dark in the sky. So it might be very powerful. It'll be interesting to see the difference between a full moon and the new moon, if there is a difference at all. Have you had any experiences such as this where you went to a shaman or had some kind of esoteric experience through practices, spiritual practices?
Oh, I've had many, and I haven't necessarily gone to a shaman, but I know that on many occasions, and I do remember some more when I was a lot younger, I would have those lucid dreams where I was in my dream and I was aware that I was dreaming, or in this case, something or someone were chasing after me. I would consciously sort of turn around in my dream to face them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several experiences like that, where sometimes it's even a dream within a dream. And they're just these different layers of consciousness.
Yeah, I've had quite a number of them as well. And but they've been very, I guess I would say they've been more spontaneous.
Hmm.
In the sense that, and then this most recent one wasn't so much a, like some kind of dream state. It seemed very, it was more a conversation. You know, it was like being able to speak beyond the veil and communicate with, I guess, guides and higher self. That's how I experienced it. You know, where talking about life and some changes that were taking place and what was happening in the world and getting a greater insight on how to navigate life. It was just a very interesting kind of conversation. that I believe we all have in our dream state with our higher selves, but we very rarely have an opportunity to bring that information back and remember it. So I think that was what it was. It was interesting.
Yeah, and I think for myself, I've also had, I guess, dream states where I recognized another person's energy. And mm-hmm. and it's sort of, I've been in the sort of, I guess, realm where you're just sort of enjoying that person's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily always a conscious conversation, but it's just a sense of a presence. And I find that those dreams have been rather calming. It's a way to calm your spirit.
Exactly.
And in the quietness of the dream, it's more I wouldn't say feeding off of, but your consciousness of another being next to you. Who's there to just soothe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had many of those, and it's really quite a phenomenon when you wake up and have this very relaxed feeling because of that experience.
Exactly. So yeah, that's what it was like. It was very interesting. It was like this long, beautiful sharing that was taking place in that dream state. And so I've been really experimenting with the, you know, some of these breathing practices that I've learned, and I'm learning that it's it's something that can be I don't know if induced is the word, but it's like by doing the meditation and the breathing, you could take yourself into this very, very deep, lucid state in which you can make a connection, very deep connection into the spirit realm. So I've been enjoying this experience ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that, you know, to do it from the perspective of intent and purpose,
mm-hmm.
and not having it happen randomly, as has had, at least for me, in the past. So I thought that was really interesting. So I do have another piece to play, potentially, but it's a little long. So let me see what time we have left. It's about 20 minutes long, so I can play it. And this one is, it's also about experiencing, thinking, and awakening. And the first speaker is Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he speaks on, can we experience the difference between thinking and awareness? And Jon Kabat-Zinn is the founder of the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, and he's one of the prime movers behind the spread of mindfulness-based stress reduction. And in this excerpt from Mindfulness for Beginners, he outlines the fundamental aspects of mindfulness meditation and the difference between thinking and awareness, which is interesting. And then we're going to hear from Mukti on three levels of awakening. And this comes from her program, The Self in Full Bloom, Teachings and Practices for Embodied Awakening. And she's an experienced yoga and meditation teacher. And she also speaks on the levels of spiritual awakening. And so I'm going to play that for you, and then we will have a few minutes following this series of excerpts, so stay tuned.
all is clear to you, when the winds have lifted all veils and the golden apparage is the locus of our souls, we will be tested no more. We will have reached destiny's lodge, and the toilsome replica of God is jettisoned for the pure.
Now, when it comes to thinking, speaking of thinking, which is so dominating in our lives, and as soon as you sit down to meditate or lie down to meditate, the first thing you'll notice, the mind has a life of its own. It's just going to go and go and go. And it's going to have ideas and opinions now about mindfulness, now about meditation, about how well you're doing or not doing, or how boring it is, and how awareness of boredom doesn't do what John said it would do. It's just more boredom. Well, think about it for a moment. Isn't it true that ever since we were in school, we've been trained in critical thinking? I mean, I remember very clearly myself asking my teachers when I was something I didn't want to learn, like, say, trigonometry or grammar. I'd say, well, why do we have to learn this? And I was told always that it would help me to develop the capacity to think critically and to speak more clearly and more thoughtfully. And you know what? It turns out that's true. And I actually love grammar, and I love the English language, and I love writing. And while, you know, I don't use trigonometry very much, I love the whole notion of the trigonometry of the universe, so to speak, and the geometry of the universe, and the fact that the geometry of the universe is not Euclidean, and that Einstein actually, you know, proposed, and it seems to be the case, that the universe is warped by gravity. And so it's like, you know, time and space are actually warped by mass. And this is really interesting stuff. So, you know, you do need a foundation in critical thinking in order to be able to understand the world even a tiny bit. So it's extremely valuable, thinking. I mean, of course, I mean, thinking is unbelievably valuable, and it's very important as a beginner in meditation, you understand. Meditation is not about shutting off your thinking. It's not about shutting down your thinking. It's not saying it would be better if you didn't think, and that we're trying to just suppress all thought and have the mind be silent. If you try to suppress your thinking, you're going to wind up with a gigantic headache. It's like trying to stop the ocean from waving. It's in the nature of the surface of the mind to wave, secrete these little thoughts, these bubbles coming off the bottom of a pot of water. I mean, there are many different images to describe them. But if we get caught in them, and if we self-identify with them, that's me, or that's not me, then we're really caught. That's what's called clinging. The Buddha put it this way. He said all his teachings could be condensed into one sentence. Since he taught nonstop, without taking any time off for sabbaticals, vacations, or even weekends, he taught nonstop for 45 years, and not just 9 to 5. And he said, all of my teachings can be encapsulated in one sentence. I like to say, hey, I mean, if that's true, maybe we should memorize the sentence, even if we don't understand it. I mean, imagine you'd get 45 years of teaching in one sentence. And the sentence is, nothing is to be clung to as I, me, or mine. I won't even bother to say any more about it. But you have to understand what he means by the verb clinging. It doesn't mean there's no you. You have to get somebody, hire somebody, some servant to put on your pants in the morning because there's no you. And, you know, you don't have any money in your bank account because it's not yours and there's no bank. And no. What it means is that the clinging is what's in that is self-identification, the self-centeredness that distorts, that creates illusions that function as prisons for us. So isn't it true that we've gotten so good at thinking that we don't recognize thoughts as thoughts anymore? Isn't it true that we tend to experience our ideas, our opinions, our thoughts as facts? As the absolute reality of things, even when we know, and this is very true, I think you'll recognize it, that someplace deep down, that's not the case. Of course we do, but we don't know what to do with that uncomfortable feeling lurking in the shadows of our awareness, in part because it's a bit scary, or more than a bit scary. But what we haven't had since early childhood or at any time during our education in general, at least that's certainly true for me, is any kind of advice or systematic training in the value of awareness as something other than and bigger than thought and emotion. Something that can hold both thoughts and emotion and which is already not caught by them or caught up in them as we've been seeing. Awareness, as I've already said, is our birthright as much as our amazing capacities for thinking and feeling, or for that matter, of our eyes for seeing. But when did you ever take a course or even one class in the cultivation of awareness, along with all your training in critical thinking? It's doubtful that you ever have. Amazingly, it's not part of the curriculum in elementary school, which it should be, or middle school or high school, or for that matter, what we call higher education. Although now that's changing rapidly in some circles across the entire educational and age spectrum. It's not that there's anything wrong with thinking. It's one of humanity's most amazing gifts. But when not examined in the larger field of awareness, thinking can run amok. It can also wind up, along with the unexamined tumult of afflictive emotional states, imprisoning us and causing great suffering to ourselves and to others and to the world too. As Aristotle put it somewhat harshly, the unexamined life is not worth living. Since mindfulness is about the cultivation of moment-to-moment awareness through careful and systematic and disciplined paying attention, it can seem at first, especially at the beginning, as if what's most important is what we're paying attention to, that is, the objects of attention. Whether it's what we're seeing or what we're hearing or what we're smelling or tasting or touching or feeling or knowing, in other words, what we're experiencing. That's in part because from the beginning, we do have to focus on something to pay attention to. Whether it's the feeling of the breath moving in and out of our body, or the world of sounds coming to our ears, or anything else we can perceive or apprehend in the present moment. But it's important to know, especially from the beginning, especially if you really are a beginner, it's important to know this from the very beginning, that it's not the breath or the sounds or even our thoughts when we're paying attention to thoughts as if they were weather patterns in the mind, clouds rising and passing away. It's not that that's most important. What's most important and most easily missed or taken for granted is the awareness that feels and knows without thinking that breathing is going on in this moment, that hearing is going on in this moment, that thoughts are moving through the sky of the mind in this moment. It's the awareness that's important in all of this, no matter what the objects are we're paying attention to. And that awareness is already ours. It's already available, already complete, already capable of holding and knowing non-conceptually anything and everything in your experience, inwardly and outwardly. No matter how big, no matter how trivial or how momentous, because that is simply the property of awareness itself, and you already have it. Or perhaps it would be more accurate to say, you already are it.
embodied awakening can be discussed in many different ways. Often when discussions are had, there's a way that it can be helpful to take what is actually whole and just separate it out for the sake of discussion and for giving context to your mind and being. So I'm going to discuss awakening on three levels. There are three levels that I've heard Adyashanti speak about, and I'll incorporate some of what I've resonated with what he shared, but also add some of my own perspective and direct experience. And the three levels of awakening are those of head, heart, and gut. When the sense of me, that movement of grasping and aversion, falls out of the center of experience, there's this sense that one's whole world that was organized around what the me likes and doesn't like, wants and doesn't want, what the me thinks, what the me hopes for, where the me's come from, your history, your future, all of that comes to rest, ceases. And in that falling away of the sense of central self, there can be the awakening on the level of head. And the experience is one of a spacious mind, a sense of freedom from the construct of the sense of me. It can feel objective. It can feel much quieter, as the thinking mind tends to be less active. It can open a lot of space in the mind, and perhaps a lot of insights might arise. There might be an increased sense of curiosity about the world and seeing it with new eyes that don't have the filter of the me. And often people who experience awakening on this level of heart may express what they've come upon by saying, I'm nothing. I'm totally free. I'm free from life as I've known it to be. I feel like I've been born again. Everything that I thought life was is a dream. And there can be this sense that life isn't real. That it all plays out in aware space. The sense that awareness is all that is. And the thought of me is simply something that arises in awareness, but has no reality. Now, awakening on the level of heart can present quite differently. Awakening on the level of heart is different than the realization that I am nothing. Awakening on the level of heart is an awakening to oneness. That sense of nothingness that may have been previously recognized on the level of head comes to know itself as everything. Sometimes people have an awakening of heart prior to awakening of head. So there's no particular order for these things. But the sense of awakening to oneness is the sense that all of life is myself, that I am everything. And there's less of a sense that life is not real. From awakening on the level of heart, if your neighbor were to come to ask you for help because they're in dire need, you wouldn't say, "You don't need help. You don't exist. Your problem isn't real." The heart, of course, wouldn't respond in this way. The heart doesn't perceive things as unreal. Awakening on the level of heart can invite a sense of intimacy with all things, a sense of connection. It's not always operating in a really highlighted way, just like you're not always feeling intimate with your foot or your hand. But there's a sense of knowing that all is myself. And in that knowing, there's a way in which resistance to a sense of other softens. And there's a sense of freedom that feels different than awakening on the level of head, which feels free from, but on the level of heart feels free to respond to what arises to be met, or free to respond to needs that come into your realm that others might present or that you might note for yourself. And there's a caring for things in a way that feels more real. There may be even a seeing that ultimately this is a play of consciousness or a dream, some say, but the felt sense, there may be a recognition that life is a play of consciousness and has a dreamlike quality, but on the level of heart, there's not much entertainment of this. The heart is too busy responding to life, engaging in life. Now, awakening on the level of gut is yet another expression, and energetically feels different. In contrast to awakening on the level of head, where the energies of the system kind of rise up toward the region of the head and the heavens, a kind of up and out transcendent movement that feels perhaps removed and more dreamlike. Or the energy of awakening on the level of heart that is an extension into this realm of time and space, kind of opening and flowering, an intimacy. The energetics of the awakening on the level of gut are more of a sense of resting down into oneself, a kind of true coming home and rooting in your being. And a lot of energies that may have previously been serving the activity of the thinking mind or organizing around one's emotional life are freed up and begin to settle down into the lower belly, into a center below the heart center, which is often called the Hara or the Dantian, just in the center of the lower belly. And as the energies in the system settle, and often the breath tends to settle more into the belly from the chest, there is that sense of rooting and groundedness. in a way that the energies that were previously going into thinking mind and active emotional life, identifying with emotions, comes to rest and be freed up and kind of fill the lower abdomen in a way that can feel very powerful. A kind of repleteness as opposed to being depleted. And in that settling and restoring, there can be a kind of nourishment to the being. And in that rootedness, there can feel a sense of alignment that resolves all sense of division. And as the energy gets freed up from a lot of habits and constructs of thought or habits of emotion, there's a great simplicity of being. And the sense is not so much I am nothing or I am everything, but a sense that there is a beingness that's prior to any assertion whatsoever. It's very quiet. It doesn't assert I'm nothing or conclude that nothing is reality. And it doesn't conclude that everything is reality. It's prior to any conclusions, any reference point. It's very quiet. You could say that awakening on the level of head is freedom from. Awakening on the level of heart is freedom to. And awakening on the level of gut is freedom from freedom.
Is John Lennon and an acoustic version of his song. And so we heard another bit of, well, the song is Watching the Wheels. And we heard some of the music earlier on, Back to the Middle. What else did we hear? Pure and Perfect. So that was that last speaker, Mukti, I found so, just listening to her speak to me was very relaxing. And very, she had kind of a tender way of describing the various states of awakening. And, you know, these are all different perspectives that I have chosen to present today. Maybe a little bit redundant, maybe a little bit in different directions, but I think that every person has a different journey and would be assisted by or inspired by something that another person would not. So I like to offer a few different things for people. So do you have any thoughts about Jon Kabat-Zinn and the difference between thinking and awareness? Or Mukti on the three levels of awakening.
Well, I think that what Mukti said was very profound in terms of accepting your surroundings. I don't know how to say this, either in its totality or what she calls completely real,
mm-hmm.
or sort of having these sort of degrees of separation. But I think by the end of her speaking, she spoke about the heart, the gut, and mm-hmm. the brain. And I think that those realms and ways of being in the world, I think, are probably closer to, I suppose, what I would imagine as a as the ideal state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that she was really, you know, I guess the ultimately. As I was listening to her, I would want to integrate all those three states and not mm-hmm. have to live in one or the other, but to have access to either of those capacities depending on what was desired or called for. Well, you know, we're out of time. We have mm-hmm. to make way for Hour of the Wolf. So I really want to thank you, Paulette, for joining me this evening and all of our listeners for joining us. I look forward to returning with phone calls so that we can enter into a dialogue with each other about these things. And so I guess, Paulette, if you have any thoughts you want to share in these last few moments?
I think that it's very important to have a open heart and an open mind. And the way I tend to see the world, and you know, as you say, you've shared different perspectives this evening, is that I don't necessarily believe always in repressing an emotion, because I think that eventually they get pent up and you know, some little thing can kind of set them off.
So true.
I think it's extremely important to acknowledge them. And with that, also have an open mind and that quietness to put things in perspective. Because sometimes you're righteously angry.
Yeah, there's cause.
Yes.
Certainly. Well, thank you so much, and I will say good night for this week, and we will return again on Wednesday at midnight here.
And thank you
on
very
Earth.
Much.
You're very welcome. And you've been listening to Heart of Mind. Fusion Earth at Midnight with Catherine and Paulette. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf. We're going to play a piece called Hope.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's just gorgeous stuff. You are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico Radio in New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. Kathy, what was that again? That outro music, that beautiful, beautiful outro music that you had?
Alchemy.
Oh, okay. Alchemy. Yes. It took me that long just to process what you were saying. I'm still new in this space. I guess we all are, right? Yeah. At least I got the code to work finally. So we got into the building. Apparently couldn't find my theme music yet. I've got it on my keys. They're right here. Which computer do I put this into, Kathy?
The middle one.
The middle one. You see how formal I am, Lev? I told you, it's like really easygoing here. Okay. Everybody can hear me grunt and groan. Oh, I see. Thank you. I'm putting it in the wrong way around. Yeah. See where it goes. Do you know that a computer hub, a USB hub, costs about $20? I may just bring one. I probably have some freebies at home. Good night, Kathy. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. Indeed it is. My name is Jim Froy. This is a weekly program. Ooh, listen to this great equipment as I move the microphone. This is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. And we have a guest, Lev A.C. Rosen. I've never asked you about the AC. Is there a Lev D.C. Rosen?
No.
Let's try that again. Say that again.
I said no. None that I'm aware of, anyway.
there we go. I found your microphone.
Yeah?
Okay.
Okay. None that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that would be good, because if there were an AC and a DC, this would, you know, either be a heavy metal rock band or, you know, something really threatening to your married life. So... let me make two announcements, both of which should have some meaning for regular listeners, if there is such a thing, to Hour of the Wolf nowadays. Terrence Taylor, who's a frequent guest on this program, and a wonderful writer and just neat guy, is also a professional movie editor. And he has worked on a film called An Unknown Country, a film by Eva Zelig. Yes, Zelig. That's spelled like Woody Allen Zelig. And it's a fascinating movie. I've watched a part of it using Vimeo. And it's about a Jewish community in Ecuador from people who fled Germany in the 30s, and so Americans went down to Ecuador to find this community, and there are free tickets to see a particular screening of this film. It's Saturday, June 20th at 5:55 p.m. at the Tribeca Cinema 1 at 54 Varick Street. That's actually a pretty spiffy theater. Isn't that one of the ones they have for the New York Film Festival?
It's right around. Yeah, the festival has been happening there, the Tribeca Film Festival. Pretty close to where I grew up, actually.
Yeah, and when you were growing up, that was probably like not the best area. And now it's like, you know, Robert De Niro is all over the place.
Oh, yeah, no, it was much seedier when I was younger.
Yes, exactly. The seedy places in New York are just going to the wealthy. It's Samuel R. Delaney actually wrote a mournful book on Times Square called Red Light, Green Light. Yes.
Are you live?
Yeah. I hope so.
Okay.
I'm hearing myself in headphones.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Okay, thank you. With this setup here, you know, we have to look out for each other. So that was announcement number one. Announcement number two, about a month and a half ago, I had a writer on the show by the name of Celeste Rita Baker, and she is she read on the air beautifully, and she has a sort of a chapbook out from Aqueduct Press called Back, Belly, and Side, True Lies and False Tales. And she is going to be doing a reading, again, free admission. This is June 18th, so that's actually similar to the other, at least they're not opposite each other. That would be a Thursday, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the County, that's C-O-U-N-T-E-E. A different spelling. The County Cullen Library. So probably somebody's name. County. I don't know. Or County Monte Cristo or something. I don't know. At any rate, at 104 West 136th Street. Go to CelesteRitaBaker.com. For more information on that, or write me an email, I'll send you the information. My email is jim@ourwolf.com, H-O-U-R-W-O-F-F. W-O-L-F, my God. You were worried about would your brain be working. You should be worried about whether mine will be. And if it was, it might be a first. Lev A.C. Rosen is the actual byline, although you sometimes go under the name Lev Rosen.
Yeah. For the kids' book I have coming out at the end of the month, since my brother's illustrating it and he didn't want to use his middle initials, we just figured Lev Rosen, Ellis Rosen, just make life easier.
Okay. But what is the deal with the A.C.?
It's my middle initials.
Oh, that's all. Okay. Yeah. Very, very fine. It's just unusual to see it. And also, you do something of which I approve. You don't put a period after each initial.
Actually request that on the cover of my books. Yeah. Yes. I think it just looks so much better.
It does.
It's such a vanity thing.
Especially on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in print, maybe that's something else. And then I never, when I write like J.R.R. Tolkien, first of all, I usually just put in J.R.R. No periods, no spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You people usually tend to figure it out.
It's actually caused trouble for me on Goodreads. It's ridiculous. On Goodreads, one of my publishers, you know, put me up as Lev A.C. Rosen with the periods, and another tried doing it without the periods, and so I became two different people on Goodreads. And
oh, wow.
We had to, like, talk to people and get permission to combine me into one person again.
Yeah, you sort of have two different people also on Facebook.
Yeah, well, there's the personal page, and then there's the
author.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. A lot of people are finding my personal page and sort of like friending me there. And I'm like, okay, but you're going to see a lot of photos of my cat here. It's not going to be as interesting.
But you can always just send them a message back and say, here's my other page. I know there are a lot of people who do that because, especially as your book gathers momentum, mm-hmm. there's a